How much do political parties know about you? Your name, your address, your interests, your phone number? This week on Download This Show, the voter tracking software used by a number of parties across the board. Plus, we break down what both major parties that could form government are offering the tech world. Plus, it is an iconic 90s piece of technology that lived in your pocket and was beloved by millions. And this year, it's making a comeback. Can you guess what it is? Well, let's get set to find out together. This is your guide to the week in media, technology, and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, right across the nation, this is Download This Show, and it is a very big welcome to our panellists this week. She is a technology writer across the ABC, but based out of the science unit, because they're very possessive that way. Ariel Bogle, welcome back to Download This Show.
Hey, Mark.
I don't know why I said they were possessive. It makes them sound weird and aggressive. They're not. They're lovely, nerdy people in the science unit. Alongside Ariel Bogle, new, fresh meat. I don't know why I called you that. This is going well. Alex McCauley is the chief executive of the advocacy group Startup Oz. You have this look of regret on your face. Like, why am I here?
Nice to be here, Mark, I think.
All right. We are mere days, hours, depending on when you're listening to this, away from the election. And I thought it was time we sat down and discussed exactly what the major parties, and indeed perhaps even the minor parties, are offering the world of technology, be it startups, be it technology users, in terms of their policies. And so that is why I have you here, Alex. Amongst other
great,
reasons.
Great to be here.
Also, just enjoying the moustache. Okay, so let's start with the Labor Party, right? In terms of what they've offered and what they're talking about in terms of innovation and technology, lay it out for me.
I mean, I think we should start by saying that neither side are talking all that much about technology or innovation this election, especially.
I was going to say, we could probably just wrap up
and sing. Let's talk about Tamagotchi.
it's not been a critical issue for the campaign, and this is in stark contrast to the last election, where obviously we were on the back of Malcolm Turnbull's National Innovation and Science Agenda. It was all the rage. You know, you couldn't get through a sentence without saying the word agile. Mm. And now it's...
And the ideas were booming, as I recall.
And the ideas were booming, very vocally. These days, not so much. I think the big issues that affect startups and technology this election are probably bigger, broader economic issues like, you know, tax policy or whatever. The Labor Party have probably been more vocal than the government on tech-specific policy. They've announced an AI center of excellence down in Melbourne. They want to do a blockchain academy over in Perth, a digital health tech accelerator in Melbourne as well, and a whole bunch of policies around skills in particular. So $25 million for regional digital skills centers, new TAFE places and more apprenticeships for digital skills, and just yesterday, another $5 million for a digital skills center of excellence as well.
So love a good center of excellence. Dare I ask, what doth one do at a center of excellence?
I mean, I think it's an election promise. So
okay, right,
there's money
right
there and there's an idea and then we'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah, that seems to be a common theme of this election across a number of issues. If you want to look at the other end of the spectrum then, we've still got the remains of the Innovation Fund from the government. Is there other things that the Liberal Party coalition are offering?
Yeah, so I think the Liberal Party would say, well, we did $1.1 billion for tech and innovation in just 2015, and lots of that is still flowing through the system, which is true to some degree. They've announced this Small Business Growth Fund, which is a $100 million fund for business growth. Some question about how much that applies to startups. They've said they want it to apply to businesses with a good track record, which mm-hmm. is not early stage startups, but maybe it's growth stage companies. So there's certainly support for growing businesses there. And we're at the end of a 12-month pilot that the coalition put in around visas. So there's a thing called the Global Talent Scheme, which is designed to help startups access the global talent pool.
Mm-hmm. I must say, Global Talent Scheme sounds an awful lot like something Ari Gold from Entourage would be in charge of. there is something on the government side in relation to space as well.
Yeah, that's right. So they've also announced some funding for good ideas to support space sector initiatives in alignment with the new space agency that got put into place.
So there's not so much space ideas boom, but certainly some whimper of idea in there.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things, to be honest, are bits and pieces. They're all sort of 3-4 up to 25 is probably the biggest $1 million is probably the biggest commitment that we've talked about from either side. And the space fund, I think, is sort of $3 million. It's hinting at priority areas that they'll do more in if they get into power.
But out of what is currently on the table, what different parties are offering, Ariel, what do you think is the most interesting?
Well, what is the most interesting? I think it is intriguing, as Alex said, that it's all bits and pieces that indicate some of the priorities should Labor form government or the coalition be returned. But there's still some litigation going on, I think, over what happened in the last year of Parliament for tech, especially when you speak to people in the startup industry. They're not so talking as much about bits of millions here and there. They're talking about what they regard as the big, inciting incidents of the last Parliament. So the passing of the encryption bill, the passing of new social media law regulations. These things have sort of compounded into a feeling that technology is being ignored in Canberra. And Ed Husic of Labor, who is their spokesperson, I suppose, on tech issues, has indicated that if Labor did form government, that they would look to reform the encryption legislation that passed December last year. Yeah, as Alex sort of hinted at, it is a bit everywhere, a lot of promises, a lot of feeling like tech's voice has lost its power in Canberra. Mm.
Probably worth adding to that in a similar vein is that over the last couple of years, the biggest government program supporting startups and tech across the country, the R&D tax incentive, has kind of been slipping away from software companies.
What is that for somebody that's...
Yeah, so basically it's companies of all colours and stripes get money rebated to them if they spend on R&D, on research and development.
Right.
And so lots of software companies are developing new software, and lots of that should be eligible under the R&D tax incentive. And so there's sort of hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars available for companies spending big on R&D to get rebated from the government. But lots of that money has started to be clawed back by the ATO in the last couple of years, which has hurt lots of growing startups. And that's been a deliberate policy of the government. They've called it a crackdown on the R&D tax incentive. And
they also proposed capping the amount that could be claimed in the last budget. That was before a committee, I think, and it sort of stalled. They want to look further at it. But it's another way that the research and development tax incentive is being curtailed some feel.
Squeezed a bit. Yeah, that's right. And Labor have said they want to try and exempt startups from some of that crackdown.
Okay, so here's... The bitsiness, and this, I swear, is the last time we'll use the word bit in the show, is to me an interesting symptom of perhaps the sellability of the tech industry to the electorate from a government standpoint. Because I think certainly in the last 5 or 6 years, some of the sheen has come off tech bros. It does seem like it's not as attractive for a government to sell investing in tech as it used to. And I'm curious as to why you think that is.
Yeah. Well, in Australia, I think there are local factors and global factors.
Yeah.
I think the local factors are clearly, this was Malcolm Turnbull's thing. He took it to the 2016 election. It didn't go so well for the Liberal Party, and that's been blamed for the slim majority that they had in the last Parliament and the difficulty they find themselves in now. And so it's been off the radar, I think, or at least much lower priority for the government over this last term. The global factors, I think, are some of them you hinted at. The sheen has come off Silicon Valley because of the cultural stuff, whether it's the Me Too movement or the tech bro stuff. There's definitely some global headwinds that technology companies across the world are facing, whether it's on privacy, data protection, election interference, all of that stuff I think has really made the case for technology companies with government pretty tough, and technology companies haven't necessarily dealt with that so well. That's kind of causing some headwinds for Australian tech companies, even though we don't really have the sector here yet.
And
I think we're
not big enough to do damage.
We probably haven't had those problems here, and yet fledgling companies and an emerging industry here are kind of having to make their way through that difficult environment, notwithstanding that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, absolutely. I do think it's interesting to look as well at why the tech industry here, it is really ranges in size. Of course, the Atlassian guys always seem to become the spokespeople for the entire industry, but it really is a broad range of companies, not only software services like Atlassian, but all the way to space satellites and things. This is the type of technology that's being developed here. But it does seem like it has been difficult for that industry to have a cohesive voice in Canberra that it can successfully sell their point of view and sell the story of tech to the government now that it is facing headwinds, not only the tech industry's perceived ties to the Turnbull era, but also this global backlash against the big tech companies, Facebook, Twitter, etc. It's a hard needle to thread, certainly, because these aren't home brand names. People don't You know, it's not like Facebook.
A lot of the tech companies in Australia, there's a lot of business to business, there's a lot of fintech.
Exactly.
You know, the most public-facing stuff, you're looking at maybe Afterpay and Canva and stuff like that. But even then, it's...
Even then, I think you might be hard-pressed to go into a politician's office and have them recognize those brand names. Mm-hmm. Off the cuff, but you probably would know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, this is your job. No, but I mean, as a genuine question, like, how do you go about reshaping that perception? Because it's a little, in tackling this, you're also tackling community perception as well as government perception because they're linked somewhat.
Sure. Yeah, look, I think in lots of ways, if people on the street are going to recognize the names, then politicians sort of have to. Someone made a joke the other day that this was about judges, that a good day in tech for a judge was figuring out how to use the remote control. And maybe that's, you know, minus a couple of degrees, that's also probably true for politicians. They're not necessarily going to be the most across technology people in the country.
Yeah.
But if their constituents care about it and understand what it's about and recognize the brands and all that stuff, then they will need to. And so a big part of it for us is to tell the economic story to the politicians and say, actually, this is where jobs are going to come from in future decades. You know, we already know that most of the new jobs in the economy are being created by young, high-growth firms, and lots of those firms are tech companies. That's happening not just in Australia, but right around the OECD. That's a message that we think should resonate with parliamentarians, because that's about basic economic management. You know, where are the jobs for the next generation of Australians going to come from? And then it's kind of up to the companies to become household names, I think. You know, you can do so much education, but if people are out there using Canva, people are going to know what Canva is.
Just to take a step a little bit further back, in terms of how Australia is ranked in the world, there's been this report recently, the Genome Project, which sort of gives a rough sense of where we sit within the world of technology. Is there a particular area that Australia excels at? Because I mentioned fintech, financial tech, and business to business. Are there particular areas that Australia does actually quite well in that maybe doesn't get enough attention?
Yeah, and I think those things are probably the things that stand out in terms of a deep dive on Australia's ecosystems. The B2B startups like Atlassian and fintech companies like Afterpay and Tyro and a few others. In terms of verticals, we're emerging in places like health tech, agri tech. I think those are sort of strength areas based on Australia's existing, you know, main industries.
So it's part of the problem that we're not making enough consumer-facing things.
Well, in terms of like tech's reputation in Australia, maybe, yeah. It makes sense that we're not making a whole lot of consumer-facing things because we don't have a big population here. And
But we are an English-speaking population, and that still dominates in many ways the free internet, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and the companies that are consumer-facing tend to be those really global day one companies that are pricing their products in US dollars the day they go live on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, that really export-focused, we don't care where you are, you just buy, you know, if you're speaking English, you're reading our website, you're buying our product. But lots of companies aren't as capable of doing that day one global thing. And so they see Australia as a small market and therefore not a great base to launch, you know, a consumer-facing product. But it's a great place to do a B2B product because there's only a few big players in most industries. And if you can get in with them and sell them your software, you're going to have a great business.
What do you think, Ariel, to put you in Alex's shoes for a second, here's an elaborate thought experiment. What do you think the tech industry needs to do to make itself more priority for whoever wins government?
It's a great question.
It's a very loaded one. Even I'm sitting here going, I don't know if I could answer that one. The reason I bring it up is because I think your assessment of it makes a lot of sense. Like, there's some local issues and there's some global issues, but ultimately we are much smaller than we could be as a startup environment. I think most people acknowledge that we could be bigger. And I'm curious, and some of that, and government has a role to play within that. No one's suggesting it's entirely up to government to build that, but there's a role to play in there. And so I would argue that I do think the government has a series of instruments available to them that could help us be a more powerful startup nation. I can't believe I used the term startup nation, but let's roll with it anyway. Part of that, the tech industry sort of needs to sell its value to government, right? And what this election sort of shows me, at least, is that they're like softly, softly stepping away because it's not a huge vote winner. So my question is, how does the tech industry become something upon which they can be a vote winner?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I wonder too if there is something a bit more subtle going on too, beyond the need to have Australians recognise Australian tech brands as household names and make politicians pay attention. I wonder if there's a sort of an ideological issue here too. A lot of people that have worked in the tech industry or who often speak for the tech industry or the internet have been very unwilling to engage with government because sort of the feeling of when the internet began was not one of let's engage with our elected representatives.
It was the Wild West. We're
the Wild West. We will become like above government. We won't even need to, you know, abide by regional laws that will be ultra-national, basically. Mm. And I wonder if that sort of clash is still being worked out because a lot of the advocacy groups that speak on digital rights issues have a bit more of that ideology. They are fundamentally disagree with a lot of the perspective of both major parties. And in some cases, they have been proven right on issues of privacy and surveillance, for example. So coming to the table and bringing all those different people with different perspectives together is very difficult. I don't think the mining industry has ideological differences with many politicians, whereas people in the tech industry might be more likely to, if that makes sense.
Download This Show is what you are listening to. We are in studio talking to Errol Bogle and Alex McCauley. Errol Bogle is from the ABC and Alex McCauley is from Startup Oz. Now, as we move up towards the election, by the way, sorry if you're listening to this on Sunday, if you scroll down the website of the candidate who represents your street, if you scroll all the way to the bottom, there's a chance, the likely chance, you might see a logo for a company called Nation Builder. It's a voter tracking company based out of the US that has become weirdly important within the Australian election, hasn't it, Harold?
That's right. So it's been interesting to watch this election as all the candidates and all the parties engage in various forms of trying to understand their constituents, their voters, through software. So Nation Builder is just one example of this type of software, but basically it's kind of a database management system. So not only can it build you a website that helpfully includes boxes where you can donate or volunteer your time, especially volunteer your data, your email address, your phone number, and hopefully your zip code. They can feed all that kind of information back into this database and start to use it to encourage you in the direction they want you to go. For example, they might ask people for a $5 donation versus a $500 donation based on what they understand of their lived circumstances.
Mm.
Or similarly, they might run a petition on Facebook, collect a few other details about, you know, your email, your Facebook profile, match that back to the electoral roll and start to get a picture of what kind of voter you might be. So this is by no means limited to one party, but it's kind of an opaque little field going on during the election because most of the major parties are really closed-lipped about what services they're using and how they're using Australian data.
Mm. How granular is the detail that Nation Builder can build on somebody?
Well, depends who you ask in some cases. So certainly the databases really depend on what data the voter, really depend on what data the parties are collecting. So they'll probably have your name and email address if you've signed up to volunteer for a candidate. For example, they can probably start to understand your address, maybe your mobile phone number, what issues you might be interested in based on ads you've responded to or petitions you've signed. But Nation Builder also offers a social matching tool. So if your email appears in the database, they might match it with your Twitter profile and pull in maybe your follower count, maybe your location if that's available. And similarly, they might pull in your Facebook profile photo and things like that. So it's part of that broader internet ecosystem where not only can it pull in those kinds of details, but it might be matched with internet cookies on the candidate's website and on and on. That sort of online quagmire of tracking that we've talked about so many times on the show.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point in part because it so many different organisations have so much data on us, but does it change it to know that it's a political party? Does it change how comfortable you are with this, Alex?
I think, well, for me, at first blush, it makes it more scary. it sort of feels like, you know, an ethical political party doesn't do this, but then in that case, an ethical political party doesn't win.
No. So, or exist, because it seems like most of them have, certainly the large ones seem to have a version of this.
A lot of this, there's like a real race to the bottom kind of problem here, right? Where if the other guys are doing it, you've got to do it too. So
yeah.
So you kind of want the good guys to be doing this, whoever you think the good guys are, you want them to be doing this as much as...
Very deftly handled that, by the way. I'm really enjoying your...
As much as the other guys, you know? Yeah. And so, it feels... kind of As Ariel described it's hard to be clear about exactly what data they have on you. And so it feels a bit icky, but in a way you want them to do it.
Where's the data kept?
Well, that's a great question. Nation Builder, their servers are in the United States. And that's another interesting facet of this because, just to give some background here, Australian political parties are given access to the electoral roll as part of being a party, being able to approach voters. But there are rules about, you know, ethical use of that data, using that data for the political process. But I approached the Australian Electoral Commission with a question about whether there are rules about how that data is stored, where it's stored, and they said matters of cybersecurity are not for the AEC, but for the parties. Mm. So there is an issue here about whether Australian data in any form, Australian data relating to the political process and people's political views, is being sent to servers offshore. So, I mean, at first glance, that might not seem like a big issue, but it does mean that Australian data is exposed to American laws, given the data is being stored on servers in the United States. So it's another part of this quite messy issue. And I think overarching all of this is the fact that political parties in Australia are exempt from the Privacy Act. So most major corporations and businesses are subject to the Privacy Act, which includes a whole range of rules about how data can be used, you know, gaining consent for the collection of data, and even rules around allowing people to access their data if they ask for it. But Australian political parties get off scot-free there, and the two major parties, Labor and Liberal, have not really been upfront with their current position on changing their exemption from the Privacy Act. The Greens do want it revoked. But in fact, the Australian Law Reform Commission recommended this exemption be revoked about a decade ago, and no one's made a big move on that. So I can imagine we'll be still having that pretty little exemption for the parties for many years to come.
All right. You can read a phenomenal article about Nation Builder on the ABC website. Just chuck it into a search engine of your choice, although I'm pretty sure I know which one you're going to use. We are listening to Ariel Bogle from the ABC Technology Reporter and Alex McCauley from Startup Oz. Mark Fanilla is my name. And look, I'm glad we dealt with the minor issue of the election, because there's something much bigger that we need to discuss. A story that has been brewing for decades. You see, long before the iPhone, long before the Nintendo Switch, we used to carry something else in our pockets. And it was amazing. And it's coming back. They're making a new Tamagotchi. Why are Tamagotchis back, Ariel?
Don't look at me. My parents wouldn't buy me one.
Really?
I was desperate.
Did you have a Tamagotchi as a child?
I certainly played with them as a kid, yeah, sure.
That sounds like somebody was denied them or was just not interested.
No, I definitely had at least one. Let's put it that way.
A friend let me take one home and look after it one night, and it was probably the best night of my life. But yes, I was never allowed one, but I can see exactly why they're bringing it back, because there's a full sort of 2000s retro tech thing going on at the moment.
There is. So Bandai, the Japanese toy maker that invented the Tamagotchi back in 1996, have reintroduced it. When I first started reading the article about the return of Tamagotchi, I'm like, oh, maybe they've made it all high tech. And no, they haven't. It looks exactly the same. Does this have any appeal beyond nostalgia? Like, is this the sort of thing that anyone is going to get? Like, do you know, in the same way that Pokemon Go was powered by nostalgia, but also it was cool and it used, it used new technology to bring Pokemon to life. Does this offer anything new at all?
Well, actually, I think what they're aiming for is not only this nostalgia element, but maybe a kind of like slow tech thing. So I think a few years ago, there was a big fad for coloring books. Apparently that was a big thing. I never actually saw anyone colouring in the flesh.
So. I made the curious decision of releasing a book during the adult colouring book phase, and let me tell you, it crushed me.
Well, I do wonder if a Tamagotchi, given that they've chosen to release it without, you know, putting it on the internet, it's not an app, it's literally the little Tamagotchi. It doesn't need Wi-Fi, it doesn't need in-app payments. It seems like kind of like still obviously a digital thing, but it kind of seems as close to non-digital as a digital game can be. So maybe it will appeal to people in that kind of, I want to be sort of shuttered off from the internet for a little while and just play and feed this little random thing.
But what I didn't realize, Alex, is that they did actually have an app. Like, I think it was an Android app you could have downloaded a couple of years ago, which I'm sort of amazed didn't take off.
Well, I reckon if you're going to play a game on your phone, there are much better games to play than feeding a Tamagotchi. I think Ariel's right. Part of it is the visceral nature of like holding the thing in like a separate device in your hand. It's got three unlabeled buttons. Mm. It's like, it is retro, but it's also discreet. It's like confined to that experience. And that's kind of cool. I'm the kind of guy who like wants to buy a X-Men versus Street Fighter, arcade machine for my living room. So maybe I'm just...
Perfect target.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to stay silent
retro
and let you go. Just give up all this stuff on the national broadcaster. Do you think it'll work? Do you think... I mean, it makes for great content for shows like this, obviously. But do you think this is the sort of thing that will get taken up in any reasonable size?
I think it's not going to be Pokemon Go, let's put it that way.
No. But also, Pokemon Go came and went, I really want to say go again, really fast. So, you know, is there value in the slower tech and it kind of burns a little bit slower and brighter? That's not how that metaphor goes at all, but let's imagine that it did.
Well, I wish I actually had the stats around how many of those Nokia 3310 Reduxes actually sold, because, of course, it does make for good headlines, as you've mentioned, but in terms of sales, I'd be very curious to see. I hope this brand has some other products on offer too.
I do quite like the idea of slow tech as a concept, though. You know, like something that is still tech, it's still electronic, but it's not connected to the wider world. It's insular. It focuses your attention on something that is not...
No notifications coming in on the sides.
Yeah, I wonder if there is a wider market for something like that out there in the world, potentially.
If someone wants to build me something that I can just play Tetris on...
Yeah, you see
in black and white, I would play that.
Exactly. You see those machines at pubs sometimes, which are like the Pac-Man machine, you know, that's sort of sitting over in the corner. I think they're fun. Like, people love Space Invaders still. It's still around.
You know what? I'm going to put this out to the world, right? Is there a nostalgia tech that you would like to come back, that if it came back, and I don't just mean like redone as an app on your phone, if there's a full piece of nostalgia tech that you think should come back, let us know. Use the hashtag download this show on Twitter. I'd really love to know, because we've got Tamagotchis.
For me, it's couch games where you and other people are in the living room on the couch in front of the console and you can all play together, like GoldenEye. Everybody sat around their N64 playing GoldenEye, you know, a small screen split into four parts.
You're trying to bring back the LAN party.
Oh, yeah, so LAN parties. I guess you should probably explain for people that don't know what is a LAN party.
You know, you hook your computers up together and you build a local area network, a LAN, and you play multiplayer video games. But no, I mean, that's a lot of effort. I'm talking about the super low effort, you know, anyone can rock in, mum has a go on it, your little brother has a go on it, and everybody, you know, is just having fun on the console in a way that doesn't involve massive multiplayer online experience. It involves really local multiplayer, socially interactive experience. It's fun. You can dive out and it does build social, dynamics.
While we're at it, I'm going to take down my website and replace it with one I built exclusively on GeoCities. Just filled with animated GIFs. Hey, Alex McCauley, thank you for coming on the show this week. Please come back some other time.
Pleasure. I'd love to.
And Ariel Bogle, thank you for coming in back on the show.
Thank you, Mark.
If you enjoyed the show, please leave we're not going to do the review thing anymore. We've done it too much on this show. Tell a friend. Tell a friend that you listen to this show and it makes you better at being a nerd. Let's go with that. Thank you as always for listening. My name's Mark Fennell and we'll catch you next time on Download This Show.